We're going to get right into it. If you open up to Exodus 19, Exodus chapter 19, seeing where Mr. Conway was going earlier, and I was like, ooh, shooting all around the various spots. We're going to start at the beginning of the chapter, Exodus chapter 19. We're going to read verses 1 through 8. I'm going to get a little bit of background here as we dive right into this message. Exodus chapter 19, verse 1. In the third month after the children of Israel had gone out of the land of Egypt, on the same day they came to the wilderness of Sinai. For they had departed from Rephidim and come to the wilderness of Sinai and camped in the wilderness. So Israel camped there before the mountain. And Moses went up to God, and the Lord called to him from the mountain, saying, "Thus you shall say to the house of Jacob, and tell the children of Israel, you have seen what I did to the Egyptians, and how I bore you on eagle's wings, and brought you to myself. Now therefore, if you will indeed obey my voice and keep my covenant, then you shall be to be a special treasure to me above all people, for all the earth is mine. And you shall be to me a kingdom of priests and a holy nation. These are the words which you shall speak to the children of Israel." It's a pretty amazing kind of opening. When you think about, they get to the wilderness, right? They have had such a journey getting out of Egypt, leaving behind everything that they had known, and slavery, and seeing deliverance. And here they are now, they're in the wilderness, they're at the base of Mount Sinai, and God tells Moses, he says, tell this to the children. If you're willing, right, you know what I did for you, you know how I brought you here. If you will indeed obey my voice and keep my covenant, then you shall be a special treasure to me. If you're going to be obedient, then the outcome of that is I'm going to like you better than I like the people who don't obey me. Right? That kind of, you know. But he says, then you're going to be a special treasure to me above all the people. For all the earth is mine. You shall be to me a kingdom of priests, a holy nation. These are the words which you shall speak to the children of Israel. Verse 7. So Moses came and called for the elders of the people and laid before them all these words which the Lord commanded him. Then all the people answered together and said, all that the Lord has spoken we will do. And so Moses brought back the words of the people to the Lord. Functioning here in a fashion that is very akin to what Jesus Christ does for us. Moses was a type of Jesus Christ. So he's there functioning as a mediator of that covenant, of that contract. He's like, okay, here's what this party says. What say you to the parameters that are laying out for this covenant? And the elders and the people say, all that you say we're going to do. Israel agreed. And this sets the stage then. This sets the stage for what we will go to next in Exodus chapter 20. Because God gives the preface of, remember how I took you out of Egypt? I bore you on eagle's wings, saved your hide, got you out of there. You guys were crying, you were whimpering, oh, this is horrible, and I took you out. Got you away from that. Remember that? Yep. And so now I'm going to tell you, if you're willing to listen to me, then you're going to be, to me, a special people, above, valued, above everyone else. And you're going to be a kingdom of priests, a holy nation. If they're willing to do this, you know, take this to them. This is the contract. See what they say. And they say, all that you say we're going to do. It's like, okay, so this is kind of like that pre-contract. And I says, okay, here's the meat. Here's the meat of what the contract is. So this would be kind of like, all right, you agreed to sell your house, you agreed to sell your car. It's an as-is condition, or maybe it's subject to an inspection. If you're getting a really expensive car, you can have those pre-purchase inspections just like you do on a house, right? You got to go through, you have the inspector, all these things happen. So you get the details, you iron those out. And so God then gives the commandments to them in chapter 20. We're going to look at one of those commandments, because I only have so much time and I can talk, or so I've heard. Oh, Mr. Keese is not even looking. No. But Exodus chapter 20, we're going to go over the first commandment today, because this sets the stage. And in so many ways, I think that in the times in which we live, if we are not rooted in the contract, the parameters of that contract, it can be so easy to veer one way or another way. It can be so easy for us to maybe waffle when something is presented to us. And so I thought it was important for us. It might seem basic, but I tell you what, there's a lot of depth to these 10 commandments. So I wanted to go through those, and this is the first in that series. Guess how many sermons it's going to be? Depends on how long I talk, right? But we're going to go over the first commandment today, because it is such an amazing commandment just by itself. So Exodus chapter 20 verse 1 says, "And God spoke all these words, saying, I am the Lord your God, who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of bondage." Actually, if you go through the Jewish text, this is the first commandment. Jews will see this as the first commandment. Now, we don't say, oh, well, yeah, that's the first commandment. But again, in much the same way of the preface of what God did when he talked to the elders. So he talked to the elders, bring the elders before me. If you go back prior to that, these are the elders who had been on the mountain and actually had a meal with Moses, Aaron, and God. They had a meal on the mountain. The Spirit was given to them so they could discern the law. Then they're brought before Moses, and God says, Moses, you tell them, here's what I want. And they say, yeah, all that you say. Then he gathers all the people for chapter 20, and now he lays out the 10 commandments. And he starts off in the same way. He says, given that, here's the history of our relationship. I would like to establish who I am and how I function. What was the thing that Moses asked? Moses asked God, and he says, well, when I go to the people, who should I tell them is there? He's like, what's the rationale for me going to the people to tell them? He says, you tell them the God of their fathers. This is the history that we have, the God of Abraham, of Isaac, of Jacob. You know the heritage. I'm that God who worked with them, who preserved them in Laban's house, who all of these things that God did, he made it happen. And so he starts off the Ten Commandments again, reminding the children of Israel, I am the Lord your God, who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of bondage. Keep your spot over here. If you have a little marker, we're going to be, you know, back here in Exodus 20 a little bit. But let's go to Deuteronomy chapter 5. Deuteronomy chapter 5. We'll read the first 6 verses there in Deuteronomy chapter 5. Deuteronomy chapter 5. This is a slight variation to what we're reading over in Exodus. But Deuteronomy chapter 5 verses 1 through 6 is what we'll read. It says, and Moses called all Israel, not just the elders, right, but all Israel, and said to them, hear, O Israel, the statutes and judgments which I speak in your hearing today, that you may learn them and be careful to observe them. Why were they doing that? Because if you obey, you will be to me a special treasure above all the people. Right? And they said, oh, we want to do that. We want to be that. That's what they said in Exodus 19 when Moses went to the elders. Verse 2, the Lord our God made a covenant. Chapter 5, verse 2, the Lord our God made a covenant with us in Horeb. The Lord did not make this covenant with our fathers. See, he's going back. He's referencing. This is a review, by the way. This is a review with the children of Israel. Moses is reviewing it for them. He's reminding them that God made the covenant with them that we had just read in Exodus chapter 19 and 20, okay? So that's what we're referring back to. It says, verse 2 again, the Lord our God made a covenant with us in Horeb. The Lord did not make this covenant with our fathers, but with us, those who are here today, all of us who are alive. That's kind of a stark thing, because you remember, on the heels of everything, those commandments were brought down. What was happening there? That was a golden calf incident. So obviously the covenant wasn't with them. They weren't going to inherit the promised land. They had judgment given to them, right? They have the golden calf. They have the whole debacle with the spies in the wilderness. chapter 5, verse 4. The Lord talked with you face to face on the mountain from the midst of the fire. If you actually go back to that, you'll see that they drew back, but Moses drew near. And they said, we don't want to hear any more from him, Moses. You go and intercede for us. But here it's being referred to, he talked to you from the midst of the fire. Moses says, I stood before the Lord and you at that time to declare to you the word of the Lord, for you were afraid because of the fire, and you did not go up to the mountain. And he said, I am the Lord your God who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of bondage. God, our Father, if we were to maybe put this into modern vernacular, right? Today, yours and mine, we weren't in Egypt, we weren't making bricks. We've got what you call first world problems. We don't have the major issues that I would say the children of Israel had at the time. But we might say, if we were to write this today, God said, I am the Lord your God who called you out of this world, out of a life of sin, and allowed his son. God would say, I allowed my son to die for your sins that you might be redeemed. Because that's exactly what he did for Israel. He took them out of captivity, out of slavery, out of a life of bondage to set them free. And what has he done for us? He has called us out of a life of sin and bondage to set us free. And then, one of my favorite words in scripture, therefore, because that is exactly as was brought out in the first message, this is not a calling. These gifts are not just given for us to look and put into a case or to shove into a warehouse. They're given to us to use, to do something with them. We have Friday night dinners, and we have a beautiful big platter that we use. And it's a silver platter that was given to us on our wedding day that was passed down to the family. It's not like, it's a family heirloom, but it's like, do you know how many years that thing just sat in a box? Because we're like, oh, it's silver. Oh, you shouldn't use that. It sat in a box for years. And then you get to a point where you're like, if we don't use it, we're going to just pass it on to our kids in the same box. I don't think it's going to move, right? It's a beautiful thing. It's just going to stay in the box. No, God says, here's a beautiful thing. Use it. And so when he says this, when he's talking, oops, sorry. So when, I'm being Italian, but I'm not Italian at all. Anyway, so when he's talking to the children of Israel, he's saying, all of this background, how I've provided for you, how I've cared for you, how I've saved you, therefore, we get into the meat of it. It is a commandment. This first commandment, it's good for us to know, this first commandment is based on redemption. When you look at the words that God is using here, it says, because I brought you out, because I have saved you, we're going to build upon that. It is a commandment of redemption, based on redemption. And if you look at the whole plan of God, is brought out about Leviticus 23. You can go through the feast days that God has. Again, Sabbath being the first one, the holy day seasons there in Leviticus 23. But it starts off at the beginning, rooted in the exact same thing as this first commandment. It's based on redemption. We have the bread. We have that as a symbol of our sin with the with the leavened bread. Satan there is like Pharaoh. He is the god of this world, much like Pharaoh was for the children of Israel when they came out. We go through the Red Sea. It's baptism. It's all about, again, that same way, God walks us along in our understanding to bring us to that point. And the first commandment is there. We're here because God brought us here. God has sustained us. He has provided for us, gave us man, gave us quail, and, you know, all sorts of parallels there in our walk. Let's go to Deuteronomy chapter 10 here, just a few pages over. Deuteronomy chapter 10. We'll read verses 12 through 13. We'll read a little bit more than that, but Deuteronomy chapter 10, verse 12. It says, "And now, Israel, what does the Lord your God require of you? But to fear the Lord your God, to walk in all his ways, and to love him, to serve the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and to keep the commandments of the Lord and his statutes, which I command you today for your good." That's all God's asking. Is that too hard? Love him and keep his commandments. Walk in all of his ways. And if we do that, then we will be to him a holy nation, a nation of priests, right? God, as a part of this covenant, the parameters of it, we're getting into the details. He says, what I want from you, what I expect from you, is for you to love me. This is what he's asking. To love him. Verse 14, it says, "Indeed, heaven and the highest heavens belong to the Lord your God, also the earth with all that is in it." Verse 15, "The Lord delighted only in your fathers to love them, and he chose their descendants after them, you above all people, as it is this day." See, God made everything. He selected his people, and he said, if you will obey, then you will be to me most valuable. He says, and now here we are. That has led to us where we are. God has made everything, but he delights in all of that stuff that he made, right? But then what does he delight in? You can go back to the Genesis account and you can see he made everything that was good, and then he made man, and it was very good. Why? Because God desires godly offspring, and that was the crux. That was the thing that needed to be created. Mankind needed to be created for his plan to come to fruition. And as he's bringing that along the way, you get to the children of Israel, which is what we're reading here about when the Ten Commandments are, I'll say, codified. That's not when they came into existence, because God's law is the same yesterday, today, and forever. It's been around. We can get into that at another time. That's a whole other message. But, and here we are today. Here we are today. Deuteronomy chapter 6 and verse 5. Deuteronomy chapter 6, verse 5. We just read about what God wants. He expects us to love him. What does the Lord require of you? But you can go read that over in Micah 6, 8. But Deuteronomy 6, verse 5, it says, "You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your strength." That's echoed in Matthew 22. If you wanted to jot that down, in Matthew 22, verses 34 to 40, what is God wanting there? He's saying, love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your strength. And love your neighbor as yourself. That's what, you know, Jesus pared it down. All of this here, we haven't even gotten to the first commandment, what we would say is the first commandment. But this is pretty deep stuff when you're talking about the rationale for why we ought to follow God. Before we even get to what God is asking, those are pretty big things. So God made everything. I mean, things that we've established so far. God made everything. Everything in creation he has made. But what does he delight in? He made this contract with our forefathers, and now it is with us today. He brought our forefathers out of Egypt, and he has done the same thing for us today. He has saved us. He has redeemed us. He wants us to love him. Therefore, let's go back to Exodus chapter 20. If you've kept your spot there, Exodus chapter 20. We've looked at the background, the rationale for moving into this first commandment. Now we'll look specifically at the first commandment. We'll also look at how it is the cornerstone for the way. which would be called, you know, that's what the church was called prior to it being them being called Christians. It was called the way, God's way of life, we might say. But Exodus chapter 20, verse 3, God tells the children of Israel, all the children of Israel, not just the elders, but he tells the children of Israel, you shall have no other gods before me. This is echoed again in a companion in Deuteronomy 5, verse 7. We only read up through verse 6, but if you wanted to, you can go over there. Deuteronomy chapter 5, verse 7, just as a reference. This is why it's so important to read and to understand some of the background that we've just gone over, because everything that we've just talked about before reading Exodus 20, verse 3, talks about God's commitment to mankind, specifically to the house of Abraham, which moved down to Isaac, Jacob, expanded out to the whole house of Israel, and by extension for us today as a spiritual body of people. Everything is talking about how he has been committed to us. He was committed to them as a nation. He's committed to us as a people. And then what does he ask? There are three main words here as we're talking about, you shall have no other gods before me. Acher, Elohim, Panim are the three words. We'll kind of go over those a bit more. Acher, Elohim, and Panim, if you wanted to write down the Strong's numbers for those for future study. Acher is H312, and it means to follow another. Acher, to follow another. Elohim, it's rulers, judges, God. And the L at the front is what you would see for God. That's H430. That's Elohim. And then Panim, which is H6440. H6440 means in front of, in the face of, or before. So Acher Elohim Panim means to follow another authority before. So you put another authority before is essentially what is being said here. And God says, what I want, because of all the things that I've done for you, I want from you loyalty and faith. That's what I expect, because I've already gone through and I've shown you through my actions and my behavior how I've cared for your fathers, how I've cared for each and every one of us to bring us here today. This is what I expect of you. If we don't set this as the baseline of mutual respect, we see that he loves us. He wants us to love him in return. He obviously respects us and gives us the opportunities. We need to honor and respect him and glorify him to where we're not going off and looking for other gods, other rulers, other authorities to follow. I don't need to go find another one. You're the one. You have been true and faithful to me. Father, I will be true and faithful to you. Without this, the other nine are useless commandments. It really is the basis from which you have to work when we're talking about the Ten Commandments and what it means to follow God. And again, so important today, because what we see happening is a crumbling, or the eating away, the erosion of anything that is consistent. If I can take something that you thought was a foundational, obvious thing, and I can make you doubt it, well then, let's just doubt everything. And when you doubt everything, who knows? You're a ship cast in the water without a rudder, without a keel, you're just skipping across. It's difficult to get through life that way. And God says, okay, you haven't had direction. I preserve you. I cared for you. I brought you here. I'm asking for your loyalty, your faith, your honor. Let's go to Luke chapter 14. We see this brought out. Luke chapter 14, verse 25. Yeah, verse 25 through, we'll read through 33. Luke chapter 14, verse 25 through 33. I'll get it right out here. Luke 14, verse 25. It says, now great multitudes went with him, and he turned and said to them, If anyone comes to me and does not hate his father and mother, wife and children, brothers and sisters, yes, and his own life also, he cannot be my disciple. He's saying, if you do not, and this has probably often been brought out, you've probably heard other messages, if you do not love them less than me, by comparison, if you do not love them less than me, whoever does not bear his cross and come after me cannot be my disciple. Verse 28, for which of you, intending to build a tower, does not sit down first and count the cost, whether he has enough to finish it? Lest after he has laid the foundation and is not able to finish it, all who see it begin to mock him. I grew up in Northeast Ohio, and in the Akron area, you remember when revolving restaurants were a thing? The top of the tower, you go to the top of the tower, eat, whole skyline. I'm not saying Akron doesn't have a nifty skyline, but it doesn't. But there's a guy who started to build one of these revolving restaurants. And there is a testament to this guy of not counting the cost, because there's a big old silo, essentially. It's a big old round base. The church ended up buying the property, and the round base is still sitting there because of the cost of knocking it down. So they just built their church in front of it. But it's like there's just, there you go. It's a monument to a lack of planning and foresight. But this makes, this is very important, again, in the context of, consider what we've read when we're talking about God coming to the elders and God coming to the children of Israel. He's basing that contract, that covenant with them on the history, the investment that he has made in them. And he says to us, as we are considering things, let's jump back in to verse 30. Well, verse 29. So, lest after he has laid the foundation and is not able to finish it, all who see it begin to mock him, saying, this man began to build and was not able to finish. Or what king going to make war against another king does not sit down first and consider whether he's able with 10,000 to meet him who comes against him with 20,000? Or else while the other is still a great way off, he sends a delegation and asks conditions of peace. So likewise, whoever of you does not forsake all that he has cannot be my disciple. Roll this right back into what we're reading about the first covenant, or first commandment. He says, do not have any other gods before me. Do not place before me any other authority. I will be that point of authority. You go back to the original contract when I was going over the covenants, Adam and Eve, what was it? They didn't trust him to provide for them. They breached the contract. They broke the covenant with him. God says, I want you to be willing to accept what I give you. Don't go somewhere else. Whoever of you does not forsake all that he has cannot be my disciple. Matthew 6:24 and Luke 16:13, if you want to jot those down for reference, we don't have to turn there, but God's saying, he says, you cannot serve God and mammon. You can't have a bifurcated brain and actively do it. There's been, I think Mr. Parian mentioned this in a recent sermon, but I've said there are a number of studies today that have found that contrary to all we would like to believe, we are not good at multitasking. It's just not possible. It doesn't matter, male or female, we're not good at multitasking. Now, some people are able to compartmentalize and then focus a little bit more easily, and maybe they're more efficient with their time, and so it seems like they're multitasking because they get a lot done. But it requires dedicated focus to any one thing to do a good job of it. What they found is that the more things you think you're multitasking at, as a multitasking, the more that you're doing that, the lower the level or quality of the output is. You haven't put your all into it. God says, whatever you find to do, do it with all of your might. You cannot serve God and mammon. If you have two authorities, you ever have two bosses on a project? Maybe you're working a project, you've got a director over here, you got a project manager over here. Who do I listen to? Okay, who's in charge? What do you want? Well, what if what one wants isn't what the other one wants? Well, I don't know what I'm supposed to do. Well, then you have great inefficiency. A lot of time gets wasted. A lot of projects can go on, and then all of a sudden they falter and they die because you get a mission creep because somebody wants this as an outcome, and another person defines it as this is the outcome, and you're like, what do I do? Well, there are no two more different rulers, bosses, judges, perspectives than the way that God wants to do things and the way that everybody else wants to do things. You know, it's God and then there's everybody, but it's God and Satan, God and this world, God and Nathan. Well, you know, insert your name there. If you get down to it, the real thing is, am I actually just fully committing over to what God wants me to do? Or am I allowing myself to inject in there, I'm a ruler, I'm a judge, I can make a good decision, I can be in charge. Am I putting myself in front of, in the face of? You think also about, I love the Hebrew definitions here when you get to panim, because it says in front of, in the face of, or before. And I think about kids cutting in line in school. I think about people who are fighting. You're like right there. You're in their face. You're confronting them. Right. I think about some of the English words that we use, and I don't know that this is really the best way to convey the thought. But I mean, when God's trying to say this, it's like, don't put anything in front of me. Don't think that you can come up with the answer. Don't put yourself before that. We're not talking about, well, if you got a choice between Buddha and God, or you got a choice. We're not talking about gods in that way. Only, right? It's anything. It's anything. Any ruler. I mean, well, who was the judge? A judge was a person who sat there and made a judgment. They sat in the gate. That makes me think about Absalom and David. And what did he do? He put himself before his father David, who was the king of Israel, and he slowly stole the hearts of the people. God says, I have invested in each of you. And I love you more than anything else. I mean, if you're going to obey me, you're going to be that special people, more so than everything I've created. And I made everything. He wants our love. He wants our dedication. Let's go to 2 Corinthians 6. 2 Corinthians chapter 6. Verse 14. 2 Corinthians chapter 6, verse 14. Second Corinthians chapter 6, verse 14. Paul here says to the Corinthian church, he says, do not be unequally yoked together with unbelievers. For what fellowship has righteousness with lawlessness? And what communion has light with darkness? And what accord has Christ with Belial? Or what part has a believer with an unbeliever? And what agreement has the temple of God with idols? For you, we are the temple of the living God. It's if you go to other parts of the world, you will often have opportunity to visit various shrines, temples. You can go to ancient Greece and you can see the various things that they have. Did they ever? Oh, this is a temple to Diana. And also, incidentally, it's the temple to Zeus. And, you know, also it's... No, they all had their own temple. That's silly. Why would you overlap them? Make a new temple. It's a different god, because that god controls different things, right? So, god of fertility, god of, god of the Nile. You have to go down there because that's where the Nile is. You can't be up here. It's a different god, right? It doesn't make sense. So why would we think that we're like, we're part of the temple of God. I think I can build a little temple of Nathan right here. Just as a part of it. And it's okay. No, it doesn't make sense. That's not what it is. Do not be unequally. You can't put the two together. If you have two oxen that are unequally yoked, I think I've talked about this. One of them, you generally want a more experienced one. And this is where Jesus said, you know, come to me, all you who labor are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you, right? He is willing to take the brunt of the load. I think I talked about this last week when I was talking about if you're doing a group project, right? Nobody wants to be that person who's paired up with that other person who doesn't pull their weight on the group project. Don't be unequally yoked. Why would you hitch together with somebody who doesn't have the same outcome? This is the basis for the first commandment. God says, look, here's my track record of me investing in you. If you are willing then to reciprocate and invest in me and follow me, it's going to be great. Don't put anyone else first. That is, in a nutshell, the first commandment. That's what he's asking for. God's ultimate favor, grace, is that he brought us to where we are. And only God can make that happen. Only God can part your Red Sea, wherever that was, that brought you through to the point of baptism. Only God can provide the food, the manna. Only God can provide those gifts that we heard about in the first message. He brought us out of sin. He is our God. And it's a choice that's left to us. So whether or not we're going to do all that he says. Will we say all that he says we will do? Let's go to Hebrews chapter 12 as we wrap up. Hebrews chapter 12. We're reminded here of all those who have gone before us. And just like Moses told the second generation of Israelites who left Egypt, he says, you know, you didn't make that covenant with your parents who weren't here. They died. And that covenant is with you who are here today. In that same way, as we read through Hebrews 12, Hebrews 11, we can see that there are many who've come before us. And God has made a covenant with them, but he's also made the covenant with us. He says, therefore, we also, verse 1 here, Hebrews chapter 12, therefore, we also, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, let us lay aside every weight and the sin which so easily ensnares us, and let us run with endurance the race is set before us. Looking unto Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and sat down, and has sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. And he did that. He was willing to be fully invested, to trust God, to love God in the same way that God loved him, loves all of those, any of those, who will forego our own selfishness, our own desire to seek out another authority, to have another thing before God. Verse 18 here in Hebrews chapter 12, verse 18. It harkens back to what we read in Exodus. It says, for you have not come to the mountain that may be touched and that burned with fire, and to blackness and darkness and tempest, and the sound of a trumpet and the voice of words, so that those who heard it begged that the word should not be spoken to them anymore. For they could not endure what was commanded, and if so much as a beast touches the mountain, it shall be stoned or shot with an arrow. And so terrifying was the sight that Moses said, I am exceedingly afraid and trembling. But you have come to Mount Zion, and to the city of the living God, the heavenly Jerusalem, to an innumerable company of angels, to the general assembly and the church of the firstborn who are registered in heaven, to God, the judge of all, to the spirits of just men made perfect, to Jesus, the mediator of the new covenant, and to the blood of sprinkling that speaks better things than that of Abel. This is where we are. In our covenant, in our contract with our Father, again, placing him as our God, the God who brought us out of sin, the God who sacrificed his Son so that we might be redeemed. Just like Israel came before God, but we have that opportunity in a much more weighty way than they did. Verse 25, Hebrews chapter 12, it says, see that you do not refuse him who speaks. Because that's exactly what they did. They couldn't handle it. For if they did not escape who refused him who spoke on earth, much more shall we not escape if we turn away from him who speaks from heaven, whose voice then shook the earth, but now he has promised, saying, yet once more I shake not only earth, but also heaven. Now this yet once more indicates the removal of those things that are being shaken, as of things that are made, that the things which cannot be shaken may remain. This is looking forward to a time when God is going to remove the physical. We've made that contract. We are his people. We're to push forward, looking forward to the promised land. Verse 28 and 29 says, therefore, since we are receiving a kingdom which cannot be shaken, let us have grace by which we may serve God acceptably with reverence and godly fear. For our God is a consuming fire. And that is the first commandment.